Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the massacre of 10 journalists and two policemen in Paris by radical Islamists claiming to represent Al-Qaeda. Alexandre Delval, a French writer, journalist, political commentator, and the author of The Syrian Chaos, Minorities and the Arab Spring Face Islamism, joins us from Paris to discuss prior threats that he and the cartoonists who were killed had received from radical supporters of ISIS and Al-Qaeda living in France, and the ideological roots of murderous fanaticism in the name of Islam, which Alexandre Delval traces to Saudi Arabia and other so-called allies of the United States. Then we will speak with Scott Stannis, a cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, whose work is syndicated to over 125 newspapers by Tribune Media Services. We will look into what kind of threats and outrage come with the job description of mocking the mighty and powerful, and whether the murder of colleagues in France by fanatics spraying bullets while shouting "God is great" is likely to deter cartoonists from lampooning religious extremism, examples of which are prevalent worldwide among those who claim to represent Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, and Buddhist faiths. Then finally, we will speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist and satirist Mark Fiore about the role of satirists and political cartoonists in society and how much self-censorship has already been adopted following the backlash from the Danish cartoonist's depiction of the Prophet Muhammad that caused an international furor, resulting in a number of deaths. We will examine the apparent insecure nature of religious beliefs that would cause a believer to kill in the name of a perceived insult to a deity whose teachings they claim to follow. And joining us now from Paris, France, is Alexandre Delval, who is a French writer, journalist, political commentator, and the co-founder of the Geopolitics of the Mediterranean Observatory. He is known primarily for his criticism of radical Islam and as a proponent of the Red-Green-Brown Alliance theory. And his latest book is The Syrian Chaos, Minorities and the Arab Spring Face Islamism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alexandre Delval.
Hello.
This horrible attack on Charlie Hebdo, the satirical magazines, in the midst of an editorial board meeting where 10 people were killed, journalists, and yes, two police were killed, one outside and one inside the office who was assigned to protect the editor.
Yes.
I take it it's really shaking up France, is it not?
Yes, it's absolutely shaking France. People are moved. And people are afraid, perhaps too much, according to me, because it's exactly what wants Islamists. But it was predictable, you know, the hatred theories and the hatred brainwash, fanatization is nearly free in all European Union. These things, it's quite predictable, and I think it's only the beginning of a new terrorist wave attacks in Europe.
But why? What is the resistance to understanding this threat, which has been apparent for some time? After all, the offices of Charlie Hebdo were bombed in November of 2011, and the fact that they had to have police protection of the editor would indicate that it was an ongoing threat. Is there any sense in France that the authorities simply aren't addressing the full nature of the threat?
Yes. First, the protection was not good, because for an entire newspaper, a building of an important newspaper, there was only one police guy, really specialist in terrorism. It was a bodyguard from the special forces of personalities protection, and he was alone. And when you enter in a synagogue in France, there are a better protection, because many Jewish were attacked in the past, many synagogues were attacked, and we took the lessons of this. But it's strange in France. Newspapers are not protected. You can enter to a newspaper very easily. A colleague of mine was completely was aggressed, and he could die. An Islamist aggressed him during a broadcast in the TV. Even in the TV, there are not protections. You can enter You can join the buildings and penetrate any kind of newspaper and TVs in France. This is the problem we have. I think we will take the lessons in the future. But for the moment, there is a repression, a condemnation of this horrible attack, but nothing is really done to get rid of the roots of Islamic violence. The ideological hatred is not fought. We must fight the roots of this violence.
And what would you describe the roots of this violence as?
It's very simple. You have the same problem in the United States. I give you an example. When the Council of American Islamic Relations welcomed terrorists belonging to Hamas many years ago, many specialists in the United States were shocked by the fact that a legal lobby, a legal and very famous organization, could blame Islamophobia, but on the same time they could support people who support terrorist groups. We have the same problem in Europe. Many legal bodies, so-called representative of Islam minorities, are using a very clever strategy. They make feel us guilty, always blaming us of being Islamophobes, racist, and so on. But it's only a strategy. They perfectly know that it's false. It's a strategy to hide their totalitarian ideology based on hatred. And they are absolutely afraid by the fact that Muslims can integrate and accept our values. The aim of those radical Islamist groups, not only terrorist, Islamist radical groups, they want to prevent Muslim citizens to integrate to our values. They want to preserve them in being Islamist, and they want to create separate communities that will never submit to our values. They want to build like an informal caliphate, an Islamic community that will not respect our values, our root, and will build a kind of Islamic state with no boundaries and no state, but an informal Islamic state. They want absolutely Muslims to go back to Muslim religion and Muslim law and Muslim Sharia. They fight integration and assimilation, and they don't want us to live together with them. It's why I say that the first victims of this new religious fascism or totalitarianism are Muslim themselves.
Well, when you say they, though, it's clearly you're not condemning the entire Muslim or Islamic faith, 1.7 billion people. It would seem that in this incident in Paris, with the massacre of the cartoonists and editor of the newspaper, along with his French bodyguard and the policeman outside, they shouted and they told one of the journalists who they didn't kill that they were members of Al-Qaeda. And so, you know, when you have the Arab League and the Al-Azhar Mosque, Egypt's top Islamic institution, condemning these attacks, it's not as though there's obviously an enormous distinction between Islam and these people who act in the name of Islam, whether they are Al-Qaeda or the so-called Islamic State, which in the...
You're right. We must distinguish between normal Orthodox Islam and radical terrorist Muslims, of course, because they have two different strategies. But Al-Azhar is not moderate Muslims, is not a moderate Islam. In Al-Azhar, they teach the fact that jihad against unbelievers and against Zionists must be continued. They teach a radical theory based on a Bedouin mentality and old thinking Sharia that has never been reformed since cycle 900. Since more than 1,000 years, this Orthodox Islam spread in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, in many Muslim states, based on Sharia, theocracy, the fact of woman is not equal to the man, the fact of being a duty to kill those who make blasphemy. This kind of Islam is openly taught in Pakistan, in Gulf states, and even in Al-Azhar. They are a double game. They condemn terrorist attacks belonging to Al-Qaeda because they fear Al-Qaeda and even ISIS, because those terrorist organizations want to destroy the corrupted Arab states. But in reality, the Islam they teach is quite close. They never destroyed the legitimacy of Islamic violence, which is absolutely clear and openly taught in many, many mosques, even in Turkey. In Turkey, they don't teach a reformist, a liberal Islam. They teach an orthodox Islam that makes as a duty to kill those who mock the Prophet and those who make blasphemy. And when Pope, the former Pope, made a very clever speech on Islam. It was a very high intellectually speech on Islam. He was accused to be an enemy of Islam, and even Turkey President Erdogan, at this time he was prime minister, he condemned very violently the Pope. And when caricatures were made in Denmark, many, many Muslim states, even the Arab League and even Al-Azhar, exaggerated. They even made some false caricatures in order to exaggerate the what happened and in order to fanatize the troops. And many, many people were killed because those states and those mosques and those Islamic center and university as Al-Azhar, they absolutely don't teach a moderate Islam. They just are different. They are not as violent as terrorists. But the root of their ideology is very, very close.
Again, I'm speaking with Alexandre Delval, who is a French writer, journalist, political commentator, and co-founder of the Geopolitics of the Mediterranean Observatory. He's known primarily for his criticism of radical Islam and as a proponent of the red-green-brown alliance theory. And his latest book is The Syrian Chaos, Minorities and the Arab Spring Face Islamism. And we're speaking to him in Paris, where there was a horrific attack today on the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, the Charlie Weekly, in which 10 journalists were killed along with two policemen. But when you say the roots of radical Islam, we have a kind of form of geopolitical correctness here in the United States, where we pretend that Saudi Arabia is our ally, when it's the Saudis who, more than anybody, have been using their enormous petrodollars to spread a radical form of Islam, which is known as Wahhabism, because the royal family have an arrangement with the Wahhabis where they get to control the country, take all the money, and they use the religious police as a means of control of the population.
Exactly.
And but it seems that the first target of Islamic radicals, and again, you know, when you talk about the Islamic State, I think it's more accurate to use the Arabic term Daesh than Islam, because how can anybody pretend that these killers like al-Baghdadi are speaking in the name of Islam? In fact, it was a tweet from Charlie Hebdo mocking al-Baghdadi that may well have provoked this attack.
But, you know, when Hitler's ideology called himself Hitlerian or National Socialist, we did not refuse to call them how they themselves call themselves. If Islamic State changed the name of Daesh, which means in Arabic the Islamic State of Iraq and Sham country, it means big Syria. If they change this name, Dawla Islamiya fi Iraq wa Sham, into Islamic State, it was because they wanted to show that they are increasing, they are getting more territories, and they are extending their rule and their state. Then I cannot accept to hide the real name of my enemy. If the enemy pretends to kill and to extend his empire in the name of Islam, why should I hide this? Second point, in Iraq and Syria, we now know that many, many tribes, Sunni tribes, many even Sufi organizations like the Naqshband, even Muslim Brotherhood, and even secular militaries who were former soldiers of Saddam Hussein, they joined Islamic State because they recognize themselves, the Islamic State, as the one who defends all Sunnis against unbelievers, Shiis, Christians, Crusaders, and so on. Then I mean, it's not only this Islamic State is not only made by stupid terrorists or gangs. The power of the Islamic State comes from the fact that many population loved them or accepted them as savers against Shiis. It means that it's worse than we can think. They are not composed only by Salafists and Wahhabis. Many normal Sunnis joined Islamic State. Even in Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, who wants to join European Union, as a double game, he helped a lot ISIS. Many normal Muslims like Erdogan, like tribes in Jordan, in North Lebanon, even in Maghreb, they joined in their heart the Islamic State. Even in France, many people say that Islamic State is jeopardizing unbelievers, and it fascinates many, many Muslims. Of course, it's a minority in our countries, but in Iraq and Syria, it was not a minority. It was a majority among Sunni districts.
Well, I think a lot of analysts have pointed out that the Sunni have been shortchanged by the Iranian-dominated Shia government and marginalized and alienated, and they may have an alliance of convenience with al-Baghdadi. But in Pakistan, for example, the radical Sunnis influenced by Saudi Wahhabi ideology who fund all of the madrasas, yes, their first targets have been the Sufis and the Shiites. Yes. So there's plenty of examples of Muslim attacks on Muslims. And of course, you have a history in Christianity of the 30 years wars between the Protestants and the Catholics.
You're
and,
right.
And even Northern Ireland, it's only recently that things have calmed down in Northern Ireland. So nobody is without sin, as the Bible says in this regard. But what's your personal, have you had any threats? Because you've been a fairly outspoken critic of radical Islam in France and of the French authorities and of what you have described as excessive political correctness in the French cultural establishment.
Yes, first, I have been threatened like anybody who writes about Islam and that criticize Islamic totalitarianism. But those who are most jeopardized and threatened are, first, bad Muslims, as you said. Some Sufi, some rationalist, unbelievers, those who didn't want to be any more Muslim, change religion. The bad believers or the apostates are the first victims. After that, of course, those who mock Islam, like Charlie Hebdo or Theo van Gogh in Holland many years ago. He also was killed not because he criticized Islamic Al-Qaeda movements, but because he wanted to blaspheme. He helped a Somalian girl to make a movie that represents naked girls with the veil and sentence on the Quran in their body. This is very grave. For Muslims, the worst thing is to mock the Prophet and the Quran, which is not only a book, but the incarnation, the incarnation of God in writing. It's something uncreated. It's as holy as Christ for Christians. Then for Muslims, the red line is to mock and to blasphemy. It's why us geopolitician, we don't blaspheme. We just describe things. We are less jeopardized than those very courageous thinkers, writers who are Muslims and who challenge their own religion. Those are under danger. Second thing about the politically correctness, it's very important to not to confuse the things. Of course, we must fight against racism. Of course, Muslims are not all radical Muslims. Of course, the majority are moderate. But it's not enough to say this, because in all the world, in Thailand, in China, in Chechnya, in Israel, Palestine, in Maghreb, even in the United States since September the 11th, and even before in France since the 80s, we know the Islamic violence. In all the earth, Islamic violence is now something that everybody can face and know and is concerned with. We must wonder why, not only in one country, but in all the world, we see growing radical Muslim movements, not only because there are some fanatics who would not be real Muslims, as we say, in a Islamically correctness. No, the real reason is that many friends of the West, like Pakistan, like Qatar, like Kuwait, like Saudi Arabia, are they built terrorists. Not because they really build terrorists, but because they spread the ideology that terrorists are using as a legitimation. In Saudi Arabia, they teach that Jewish are like monkeys and must be killed. They teach that homosexual must be killed. They teach that Christians cannot live in this country. In Pakistan, the legal law can put in jail Asia Bibi and condemn her to death just because she did not deny his own faith and she drank with a water that was reserved for Muslims, and she was accused of blasphemy by the Islamic State of Pakistan. It was not terrorist movement. It was our partner, Islamic State of Pakistan. We must know that all this intolerance is not only the fact of a little movement of extremists. It's the fact of many, many states that on the one hand fight radical terrorists, but on the second hand they produce the same ideology of those terrorists. They are schizophrenic. It's why confessed a civil servant of Saudi Arabia many years ago, he confessed that it was impossible when they wanted to re-educate young people belonging to Islamic terrorist movement. He confessed that in Saudi Arabia, they cannot say to them, it's not good to kill. They were obliged to say to them, you killed the wrong person. You should kill Russians, you should kill Israelis, but not Saudis. Imagine a state that is not able to say just that it's not good to kill.
Well, just in
because they teach that it's normal to kill unbelievers.
Well, just in closing, Alexandre Delval, is this likely, though, this incident in Paris, it's likely to play into the hands of Marine Le Pen and the right wing in France that are growing in numbers and popularity? It's not likely to lead to, at least, let me ask you, is it likely to lead to more solidarity with moderate Islamists, or is it likely to fuel anti-Islam, Islamophobia from the French right wing in terms of Marine Le Pen and her party?
Yes, I understand what you say, but I think it's a false problem, because we know that many extremist right extremist movements are linked with some extremist Islamist group. We know that they share the same hatred against Jewish. And if you observe Al-Qaeda militants, they don't kill people from the extreme right in Europe. They kill libertarians, free thinkers, and progressists, because they are the real enemy of them. Then, according to extreme right, it's a false problem, I think. And Marine Le Pen is much less anti-Muslims than many other extreme right movements. She is more against immigration than against Muslim, and she doesn't want to speak a lot of Islam, much less than Philippe de Villiers before. then I think the real problem is not the growing of extreme right. It would only be the consequences. The real problem is the fact that we are not anymore able to make a willing to live together. We are not able to integrate new generations of people coming from outside. It's very grave. Our values are not strong enough to convince the people who come here. The more and more we see the new generations coming from Africa and Arab countries, the more we observe that they are less integrated than their grandfathers. They are more Muslims, more radical, more observers, more fanatics than their fathers and their grandfathers. For us, it's a very big challenge to try to build a new living today together solution. We have to rethink our values and to strengthen them. I think this is the real problem. And the growing of the extreme right, it's only a consequence of the lack of the lack of success of the political class since many years that was not able to preserve our integrity and our values. Those who are responsible of the situation are the right, the normal right and the normal left and the center parties, who all were they all agreed to let many fanatics come into our countries, and they gave to them immigration was given like a gift to those fanatics who wanted to use those immigration people as a tool to one day invade Europe. Of course, I think they will not succeed in invade Europe. I don't believe in this chaotic theory. But it's the aim of Islamists, and our leaders let them penetrating our territories. I will conclude like Karl Popper, who wrote The Open Societies and Its Enemies. I think our open societies should be open only to those who share the democracy and those who share the fact of free thinking, free speech, freedom, and the fact that life is holy and equality between men and women. All those who adhere with this charter are welcome, but those who don't adhere to human rights and this democratic open society charter are not welcome. The mistake of our leaders is to have welcomed people who fight our open society inside of our open societies.
Well, Alexandre Delval, I thank you very much for joining us today from Paris, France.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Alexandre Delval, who's a French writer, journalist, political commentator, and the co-founder of the Geopolitics of the Mediterranean Observatory. He is known primarily for his criticism of radical Islam and as a proponent of the red-green-brown alliance theory. And his latest book is The Syrian Chaos, Minorities and the Arab Spring Face Islamism. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a cartoonist on the threats and outrage that comes with the job of mocking the mighty and powerful. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Scott Stannis, who's a cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, whose work is syndicated to over 400 newspapers by Tribune Media Services. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Stannis.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I guess your job description is to mock the mighty and powerful. And what kind of threats and outrage come with that job description?
Oh, you can imagine all types and all sizes and shapes of threats. I wrote for a column that's going to run in tomorrow's Chicago Tribune about a threat I got years ago in Arizona. A fellow had called in response to a cartoon I'd drawn about Arizona voting down the Martin Luther King Day, and he called and left a message saying, after he kills me, he's going to kill my two kids.
So he obviously didn't make good on that threat, but what was your response, or what did you do?
Well, this was terror, because it was 1991, before the internet. You know, how he knew I had two kids meant he had to do some serious homework. I had police protection for a good number of weeks following that, with the mirror under the car, because don't forget Don Bowles, a reporter for the Arizona Republic, had also been blown up in 1976. So there was kind of a history there. So, you know, it terrorizes you, but then you go into work the next day and you're alive and you keep plugging away.
Well, I guess what happened in Paris, though, I think is way above and beyond. It seems to be motivated by a fairly identifiable and rather toxic political ideology, which unfortunately we've seen too much of. This is something that I think has shocked us all, surely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is beyond anything that we've experienced, but it's not surprising. You look at what happened with the Danish cartoons and a few years back, and in fact, one of the creators of that cartoon, I believe it was within the last 18 months, had his house broken into by an Islamic man brandishing a machete. So this is something that doesn't surprise any of us too much, but it's still appalling.
Well, at this point, the perpetrators have basically been caught. One of them, Hamid Murad, an 18-year-old, was killed, and two brothers in their early 30s, Saeed Kouachi and Sharif Kouachi, were both captured by the French, and they were apparently well known to the French. They have been linked to a Yemeni terrorist network, and Sharif Kouachi was convicted in 2008 on terrorism charges, funneling fighters to Iraq during the insurgency to kill Americans. So it's pretty hard to understand why. You know, I guess that's the price that free societies pay. You know that there are people amongst you that have these kind of records and motivations. But do we have to wait until they do what they do?
Oh, my gosh, that's a $1 million question, isn't it? I mean, in a free society, is someone truly innocent until proven guilty? The instances you mentioned would certainly imply that their stay in your country they may not be welcome any longer. I think that's a reasonable response to that. Without sounding jingoistic, it seems that societies, cultures have a right to defend themselves. And if these allegations are true, and I suspect they are, that these brothers and this group were connected with a Yemeni terrorist group, an Islamic group, and they were funneling people to kill Americans in Iraq, those might not be people you want in your culture.
But they were both, at least the two brothers, were born in France. I don't know anything about the young 18-year-old that was killed, but they were the two brothers were both born in France. They're French citizens, and they are among the estimated 5 million Muslims living in France.
Well, and many of them are disenfranchised. I know that there are extenuating circumstances on this, and France's record on this is frankly abysmal. And to subjugate and marginalize such a large segment of your population, clearly it's going to create enormous frictions. And so I'm not in any way, shape, or form defending the act. I'm trying to understand the action. And this is, again, you watch the video, you hear what happened. I mean, I don't know. Did they go into these offices and actively look for the cartoonists?
They actually had a list of names, and they called them out. They knew exactly who they were looking for, and they spared a number of people. And one of the a woman cartoonist, they spoke to her and told her that they were with Al Qaeda. So it seems fairly, you know, well planned out and motivated. And some of the speculation is it may have been prompted by a tweet from the satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo, lampooning al-Baghdadi, the leader of the so-called Islamic State, Daesh.
Well, and that's, again, you know, that's the price of a free society, is to hear things and read things and that offend you. There's a lot of stuff I don't like. There's a lot of stuff I'm sure you don't like. But, you know, that's how it works. And at some point, I'm hoping Islam, you know, leaves the 4th century and many of these guys and comes into the 21st century. That seems to be a slow grind, but, you know, I'm a Catholic, and we have a little bit of history ourselves.
Right. It wasn't too long ago in Northern Ireland that the Catholics and the Protestants were killing each other. So
exactly. So the Sunni and Shia conflict, I think, is very, very similar.
Right. But if I've seen reports in the media, Scott Stannis, of for example, in Iraq, apparently in Baghdad, the somewhat besieged government there, on their television, they have satirical programs with the characters mocking al-Baghdadi, and they see that as a weapon against these fanatics. Do you see a connection there? I'm trying to understand the apparent insecurity that comes with a religious belief. I would have thought a religious belief would give you strength and purpose, as opposed to give you insecurity and the idea that you would want to kill somebody for making, you know, fun of the prophet that you worship. You know, I don't understand that.
I think that a great example would be the play Book of Mormon, which takes the Mormon Church down a peg on every aspect of its theology. And the Mormon church's response was to laugh, and they actually have advertising in the playbill, one of which was very, you know, said, the book is always better, which is, you know, very clever and very funny. It does make you wonder about their view of their God, that their God is so weak that he can't take a joke. You know, I'm remembering, do you remember the Mapplethorpe controversy of years ago with, excuse my language, but the name of the piece was Piss Jesus, and it was a crucifix and a vial of urine. And it was vile and offensive, and as I said, as a practicing Catholic, yeah. But would I go out and kill them? No. Do I think my faith and my church is strong enough to handle a photograph? Yeah, I think we can. So it does make you wonder where and how insecure that faith is. But then again, I go back to history, and you look at blasphemy rules and the Inquisition, where, you know, here's the thing. Fanatics don't have a sense of humor. I think that's what we take away from this.
Again, I'm speaking with Scott Stannis, who's a cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, whose work is syndicated to over 400 newspapers by the Tribune Media Services, and he's the creator of the comic strip Prickly City. Well, in that regard, Scott, since I was born in Australia, whenever people in the U.S. say, well, you know, you're obviously descended from convicts, which is Australia's history as the first gulag, I'm quick to point out that Americans are descended from religious fanatics. So, but when did it end? I mean, in other words, you know, America is in a peculiar sort of, it's half pious and half porn, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the question, but I know that the religiosity. I worked at the Birmingham News for 13 years, where candidates of both Democratic and Republicans would run on the Bible. And these are judicial candidates. And as someone from not of the South, it remains a head-scratcher that your faith has to inform every aspect of law, of politics, and it gets to be grinding. I think it becomes, especially if you're not from the United States, you know, it's curious, and again, a head scratcher, and I imagine frustrating for those who don't know us very well, but I think your point is well taken. The fact that we do come from religious fanatics may explain an awful lot.
Well, I was suggesting there that we have come a long way from the witch burners of Salem. Now, you know, and so I guess by extension, you know, one is asking whether or not this could happen in terms of Islam, because the forces that want to roll back the clock in Islam seem to be the ones that are getting all the headlines.
Well, they certainly are the most extreme, and by turns their acts are extreme, and that makes for good theater, if I may. I mean, that's... But will it change? Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a slow grind. I mean, you're talking about regions of the world where unemployment is 50, 60, 70%, where literacy is not that high, where women are treated as chattel. I mean, that's a high bar and a long slog, and I think I've run out of clichés.
Well, I suppose it's a terrible thing that happened, but I must say that the footage that I've seen of the response from the Parisians has been quite inspiring. Thousands and thousands of people have taken to the streets, and you know, the people across all races and cultures are sharing outrage and sharing their sense of solidarity with these murdered cartoonists.
And that's great, because I think people of a refined 21st century sensibility get it. You know, they understand satire. I mean, you and I were raised on it. TV, movies, print, and now the internet. And I think it's going to take some time. And I think, too, you have a culture in Islam that continues to cling to, you know, 4th century edicts. When you have a caliphate being established in, you know, Syria, well, you're talking about a 4th, 5th century mentality. And that's going to be hard to fight. But with technology, with patience, I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, but I think I there's always hope, because humans are strange, silly creatures, but we do come around eventually.
So, in terms of what's your response as a cartoonist going to be? Is this something that you feel you can take on? Is there a way to diffuse this horrible situation?
America's press, particularly. I mean, I don't know any newspapers that have run the front cover of Charlie Hebdo yet. And you know, during the controversy with the Danish cartoons, I'm not sure any American newspaper ran any of those cartoons. I think the time now is to be less cautious. It's to be less politically correct. It's to say we have the freedom to run this information. We're writing news stories about this story, and we should show what people are mad about. And so as a cartoonist, it's frustrating to have editors and people in the American who run other media not run these images. And that will continue to be a frustration. And until we're ready to confront that, I'm going to do the best that I can, but I suspect that it will be edited, which is their right, but it's also a great frustration. Did that answer the question, sort of?
Well, it did, but I'd ask a further question then. What about mocking Christian fundamentalists and Christian fascists? I mean, we don't use that word. Islamofascism is a popularly used word, but there have been cases of Christian fascists and fanatics.
Sure.
And just only, was it yesterday in Colorado, the NAACP was blown up by a white man who is presumably, well, we'll see what his connections are, but apparently it was an act of racism.
Yeah, in all things in the name of God, they're not all good. And, I would argue that a lot of them are acts of charity, acts of contrition, acts of humility. I mean, a lot of these come from religious sensibilities, but, well, as you mentioned, a lot of it comes from, and I mentioned working in the South, in Alabama of the United States. It's becomes something of a tool to repress, to feel superior to, and to squelch anything or any idea that you don't find comfortable or comforting, and that's not a great way to live. So, as a cartoonist, I will venture forward in the next few days, certainly the next few weeks, to explore those issues. And I have two venues. I have my editorial cartoons, of course, with the Tribune, but I also have my comic strip, which we discuss a lot of issues like that there.
Well, I look forward to you tweaking us all, Scott Stennis.
Well, thank you.
It's quite a job you have to be a professional imp, I guess, is the way to describe it.
Well, may I ask what part of Australia you're from?
Well, it's been a long time. I consider myself an American, but I'm from a place called Byron Bay, which is something of a paradise. It's on the east coast, just south of Brisbane.
Ah, nice. No, I've been up to Bundaberg. And,
oh, that's yeah. Well, it's not too far. It's a bit south of there.
Well, so you're from the deep north.
Okay. Yes, that's what we call it. Yeah. Well, I thank you. Me and the WikiLeaks guy are both on the same part of the world. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Take care. Thank you.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Scott Stennis, who's a cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, whose work is syndicated to over 400 newspapers by Tribune Media Services, and he's the creator of the comic strip Prickly City. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with a Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist talking about the role of satirists and political cartoonists. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is satirist and Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Mark Fiore, who the Wall Street Journal has called the undisputed guru of the form. He creates animated political cartoons in San Francisco, where his work has been featured in the San Francisco Chronicle's website and sanfranciscogate.com for over 10 years. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Fiore.
Hi, Ian. Good to be here.
And obviously,
in a way. in a sad way.
Well, do you has it ever come across your mind that an American cartoonist could be attacked, or has it ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't happened that I know of, and I'm sure we would hear about it. But over the years, I'm sure a few have been beaten up and things like that. But nothing nearly approaching this scale.
So what's the worst threat that you've ever got, or the worst reaction, shall we say?
Basically death threats, but, fortunately, they aren't too common. And if they do happen, more often than not, it's just people ranting and raving. Uh-huh. I've never been, knock on wood, physically attacked or anything.
So what is your understanding, and why do you think there is this peculiar sensitivity, particularly with the more radical Islamists, like apparently one of the attackers in Paris did tell one of the cartoonists cartoonist mm-hmm. named Corinne Ray. He spoke to her in fluent French mm-hmm. and claimed he represented Al-Qaeda. So it's pretty clear that the Al-Qaeda types do not have a sense of humor.
Yeah, that is for sure, and they also don't really have too much in the way of smarts if they think that this is going to make cartoonists change their drawing habits. I think this, if anything, is probably going to encourage more cartoonists to stand up and, whether it's draw Muhammad or draw things that certain extremists don't want you to draw, this isn't the way to do it, clearly, and I think this, if anything, this will give people a little more resolve to use their free speech liberally.
So in terms of your own self-censorship, for the want of a better description, are there any areas that you wouldn't venture into because of, say, religious sensibilities?
Well, this, you know, ever since the Danish Muhammad cartoons came out, this has, you know, really been in many publications and many places has been a no-go zone. You know, so this is something you have to treat very, very carefully. And, you know, I like to think that I don't self-censor, but obviously I'm not publishing cartoons that intentionally rub salt in the wound and, you know, are made up of nothing but caricatures of Muhammad. But I think people should have the right to do that.
But it essentially hasn't happened over here. It would seem that those that attacked the Danish cartoonists and those that killed the Dutch activist have been successful to that extent. Do you recall an American cartoonist that has ventured into this area of, you know, mocking the Prophet Muhammad?
Well, without getting into too much detail, I mean, I've done that, but the way that I've drawn Muhammad and depicted Muhammad is partly through drawing him myself, but also through showing historical depictions of him, you know, in old paintings and friezes on walls and tiles and rugs and things like that. I mean, it's not the first time that someone decided to draw Muhammad when these Danish guys did it. You know, this is something that's been going on for a long time. It's only when the extremists ratcheted up the temperature that everybody freaked out about these Danish cartoons, and that's where we are today.
And again, I'm speaking with satirist and Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Mark Fiore, who the Wall Street Journal has called the undisputed guru of the form. He creates animated political cartoons in San Francisco, where his work has been featured on the San Francisco Chronicle's website and at sfgate.com for over 10 years. But Charlie Hebdo, the satirical magazine that was attacked in Paris on Wednesday, 10 cartoonists, including the editor, were killed, along with two policemen, one of whom was a state-appointed bodyguard, I guess the equivalent of the Secret Service. They seem to be equal opportunists in terms of who they take on. I mean,
definitely. They had a great cartoon of Jesus being born, which is like nothing that you've ever seen before. So, yeah, they definitely are not exclusively focusing on Muhammad by any means.
And were you aware of them before this horrible attack in Paris?
Yes, I was. I was.
So you followed their work?
I didn't follow it as closely as I should have, but no, I definitely had heard of them and have crossed paths with French cartoonists here in the United States as well.
Right. Well, of course, there's a famous front page they did of the Prophet Muhammad kissing a cartoonist from...
Yeah, exactly.
And love,
yeah, I mean, they, you know,
love
they
is stronger than hate is they, the caption, you know.
They had a, you know, I wouldn't go as far as saying it was a finesse, but they definitely had a way of doing it that wasn't just a nasty, angry way. But, you know, clearly these extremist guys, the crazy jihadists, they aren't going to see the finer points of, you know, oh, that's funny, and I can laugh at that, and, you know, I don't have to go out and kill someone because of that. I mean, my wish is that they would have gotten so angry that they would have done their own, jihadist cartoons, but I think that's in a magical cartoon world that doesn't exist.
So at the risk of indulging in amateur psychiatrics, it does seem to me that at the heart of this attack on cartoonists, it lies some peculiar kind of insecurity, surely.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I did a cartoon a few years ago pointing out the fact that, you know, these are guys that think nothing of martyrdom and look forward to it and violence is part of the culture, yet they're so incredibly offended and upset by a cartoon. You know, that says something about their psychology, but I think it honestly also says something about the power of cartoons and how effective they can be, you know, even more so than the printed word.
Well, they certainly do a great job in terms of encapsulating the absurdity of politics. And I don't know whether you followed the vote yesterday in the 2 days ago in the House of Representatives where they voted for John Boehner. And
oh, yeah.
The people that were opposing him were truly a kind of a clown car. I mean, I don't
know. Oh, for sure. Well, and the weird thing, you know, today, obviously, my cartoon deadline schedule is all out of whack, but this week I had been working on a cartoon talking about, you know, our Christian extremist friends like David Duke and, you know, his association with Steve Scalise, the Majority Whip. And that was going to be this week's cartoon. So, you know, had to shift gears and go to the Islamic side. So,
well,
it's a weird world, and there's always plenty of awful cartoon fodder out there.
Well, I hope you go back to the Christian side, because, frankly, we hear so much about Islamic fanaticism, Islamofascism, etc., but yeah. Precious little about Christofascism. The term itself, I don't even think, has been coined.
Yes, well, and unfortunately, this is going to bury the story of the bombing at the NAACP office in Colorado Springs yesterday. You know, that's an interesting thing that we should be following, too. But, you know, clearly this is just it's a tragedy for the journalists and their families and those police officers. It's just, you know, it's just a terrible, terrible thing.
So how is it affecting you personally, just in closing? I want to get a sense of whether you
personally, it really, you know, makes me appreciate the freedom of speech that we have here, and honestly, that the, you know, it exists in France as well. I mean, that's an amazing gift that we're lucky to have. But the angry cartoonist rabble rouser side of me wants to stir some stuff up and you know, cartoon like mad, and you know, really go after these guys as much as possible.
Well, I wish you luck in your endeavors. And
thank you, Ian.
And at the same time, I don't want you to put a target on your back. But
I mean, you know, you definitely, even though it feels very safe here in the United States and in San Francisco, it's, you know, you try and do certain things to remain somewhat anonymous. And I'll keep doing those things. So thanks for your concern.
Well, I speak as somebody who's had, on two occasions, people have shown up here at the radio station threatening me. So,
That's always a little creepy when that happens.
Yeah.
Well, you be careful.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Mark Fiore, who's a satirist and Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist, who the Wall Street Journal has called the undisputed guru of the form. He creates animated political cartoons in San Francisco, where his work has been featured on the San Francisco Chronicle's website and at sfgate.com for over 10 years. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Disappeared by half.